The Karate Kid. You know what I forgot about The Karate Kid? Because I hadn't seen The Karate Kid in 25 years. I hadn't seen it when it came out in the theater. And what I forgot about The Karate Kid is that it sucked. I'd forgotten how unwatchable The Karate Kid was. I don't remember rooting for the Cobra Kai, but this time around, I was like, ugh, just take him out, seriously. Get him a body bag because he's such a whiny, sniveling little baby who keeps egging them on. He can't leave well enough alone. It's like, beat me up once and if I go back to school, I'm never gonna go near you again. I'm gonna take a different route to school and I'll transfer if I can. That's how seriously I take that. This kid gets beaten up, goes back, starts taunting them at the Halloween dance. He goes into the bathroom and the Cobra Kai are rolling joints dressed as skeletons. Is there any more frightening image? It's the most frightening image in my young, I was like, oh my God, don't go in there. Please don't go in there. Not only don't go in there, he goes in there and he pours hose water on them. They get soaked, they're slipping, and then they beat the crap out of them. It's like, you know, beat me up once, shame on you. Beat me up twice because I pour hose water on you while you're dressing it like skeletons rolling joints, shame on me. You know, the old saying.
Lights, camera, action. Welcome back to another episode of Happy Hour Films. As you all know, I am Ross Bacon, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mike McGuigan. Mike, say hi.
How's everyone doing?
And as you all know by now, we are a podcast, Cracks Open Beer, and we talk about some movies. Now, we are in week, what are we in? Three?
Four
of our Sports July.
God, has these weeks been dragging on you that much, Ross?
I know. I just couldn't think of it. I mean, July is like a long month, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, we had been doing 3-week themes for a bit. So this is the first time we've done a 4-week theme in a little while.
I mean, I feel like it'll be technically 5 given what we're going to do next week.
Yeah.
So again, like we said, week 4 of Sports July, we first started off with baseball, then we went to football, then we did some hockey. Now we're doing miscellaneous, basically.
Any sports that we feel like maybe could have been represented but didn't have enough movies. So we're hitting soccer, we're hitting basketball, and we're hitting martial arts.
Yeah, we're going to do Shaolin Soccer. We're going to do White Men Can't Jump. And then we're going to do The Karate Kid. So before we get into any of that, though, why don't we talk about what we're drinking? So, Mike, what do you got?
All right. So I was having a hard time finding a themed beer this week.
Yeah.
But LaRusso always says he's from, Newark, New Jersey.
Yeah.
So I just went full-blown New Jersey theme. So I went New Jersey Beer Co. Parkway Pilsner.
And there you go.
And for a sip.
Yeah. What you got?
All right. It's nothing too wild, but I like Pilsners, and that's what it is. It's something you could drink a lot of, I would say. Not very heavy, about 5% alcohol. But it's good. It's good. It's like when we just have a regular ale or a regular IPA that's not trying to do anything too wild. Like, they didn't do anything wrong with it. Made a solid Pilsner.
It's always good it's good to have a beer that just kind of sticks to what it is sometimes.
Yeah.
Doesn't try to get too weird with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, all right. So, and I kind of, again, I wasn't even trying to go with the theme because, you know, what am I just going to pick? Some random shit out of the fridge? I usually do that on crossover week. So I ended up going back to, Flying Fish. And I'm doing Mango Kayak, which is a hazy pale ale brewed with mango. Now, like, I know mango is, like, the hot fruit right now. They're putting that shit in everything.
Yeah.
Like, I think even Pepsi has, like, a Pepsi mango or something.
Yeah, there's a lot of mango shit going around.
But I kind of grabbed this one not only because it was something different from Flying Fish I hadn't done, but also, like, the can art kind of looks like the Karate Kid, like, sun, yeah. L.A. sun in the background, silhouette as he's doing martial arts. It's got a little sunrise or sunset in the background while there's a kayaker with his oar up in the air and he's in the distance. He looks like he's training and balancing on his kayak and ready to do the crane style, which he's terrible at but will somehow become great at. Anyway, we'll save that for later. But so why don't we get into our first movie, which is 2001 Shaolin Soccer, which is directed by Stephen Chow. And this movie fucking rules.
So about to say something, and I recognize the implications of what I am about to say.
Uh-oh. Mike,
I've been doing tier lists. I've been doing tier lists for the sports movies we've been watching this month. And as you all know, D2 the Mighty Ducks had its own tier. Shaolin Soccer has broken through the glass ceiling and made it into that tier.
Yes!
Now, I'm not sure it's as good as the D2 the Mighty Ducks, but it's strong competition, which it's
so good.
Listen, the rest of the cinema that I have seen is not strong competition. It's a mild competition at best, but
Shaolin Soccer is so good. And it's, like I said, directed by Stephen Chow, who, if you're not familiar with Shaolin Soccer, maybe you're familiar with his other movie, which is Kung Fu Hustle. And Kung Fu Hustle is just one of my favorite movies in general. It's
Kung Fu Hustle is incredible.
It's amazing because it's not like it's like a martial arts comedy, but it's not too much a comedy, and it's mostly martial arts, but it's like just the right amount of silly, and that's exactly what this is, where it's Shaolin Kung Fu mixed with soccer, you know?
And it's incredible.
Awesome.
Listen, all you need to watch to really grasp everything this movie is trying to do is watch the first soccer fight scene.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. It's like, I'm watching this movie and I'm just like, all right, this is pretty good. This is pretty good. That fight scene comes up and I'm just like, holy shit, this thing's amazing.
It's so good. And a lot of his, when you watch Kung Fu Hustle, obviously a lot of these actors are in that movie too in different roles. But yeah, the best part about this movie, and it's again, like, aside from that first fight scene, like game fight scene, mm-hmm. It literally starts off the movie by having a kid, we find out, purposely miss a penalty kick and then get beaten with bats and have his leg broken. And then we find out that the quote unquote bad guys in this movie are literally named Team Evil.
That's a, you get Team Mustache part way through the movie,
with which is girls great. And like the braids and the mustache. Yeah.
But just some of the dialogue, and like, so we get it with subtitles because obviously it's in Chinese.
Yeah.
But some of the dialogue, I'm gonna guess, is meant to be as funny. Like, I was watching it, I'm like, is this just weird? Like, weird translating from Chinese to English, or is this like the awkwardness and funniness of what is supposed to be said? Like, one of my favorite lines is when the girl comes back with the shaved head and he goes, "ET, phone home."
So first he says, "Why are you dressed like ET?" And then he says, "Well, you need to phone home."
And then my second favorite line in the movie comes almost immediately after, when she goes into Team Evil's goalie's net, and the evil goalie just goes, "It's over there."
Right, yeah, because she doesn't know how to play soccer, where to go. But,
and then third favorite line of the movie is they're playing Team Mustache, and the one guy goes, "How are they flying so fast? They must be using wires."
Right, it's so good. Like you said, like with the dialogue, and because then there's like some of the translation. Like, I had the same thing with you. I was trying to figure out what was weird translations, what wasn't, because there's a couple of times where some characters are talking and there's nothing popping up. Mm-hmm. So it's like, maybe that was a longer description of whatever the short version was that just popped up before that. But
yeah,
there is like just the names of his brothers. Mm-hmm. Small brother, big brother, fourth brother, fifth brother, you know, they're all like either what they are or what age they are, you know, like where they fall in the family.
And I love the goalie. He's dressed up like Bruce Lee. Like, he's literally doing a Bruce Lee cosplay and like does the motion, like the moves that Bruce Lee was famous for.
Yeah, he's got like the Game of Death, the yellow jumpsuit on. But the best part is, apparently that guy later in his career played Bruce Lee twice. So he actually did.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, what movies was it for? Was it for what, like Ip Man or something?
It was Ip Man 3, I think. And then there was some other like Bruce Lee story kind of like Chinese movie, I think.
Okay. But
But yeah, the goalie, and they all have their special powers. And like Stephen Chow's character is Iron Leg, and he can kick the ball like ridiculous amounts. And there's Iron Stomach, which is one of the brothers can just hold the ball in his stomach.
You get Iron Head.
Iron Head, the guy's great at headbutting. Then the goalie's like Iron Hands or something like that. It's they all have their little little traits.
There's very few people that get actual names.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's part of like the comedy of it. You know, it's just kind of like they give them ridiculous names, like Team Evil, which is great because there's two lines that your lines, but then my two favorites were the one line from Team Evil where the coach is like, "Hey, those American drugs we put them on are working. Like, they're all on steroids." And then my favorite line of the entire movie is when they're on their like winning streak through the tournament and all that. And then they give that crazy like post-game interview celebration interview. And at one point, Stephen Chow's character grabs the microphone and he goes, I want to say hi to my parents and my Shaolin master, but they're all dead.
And then
there's the other sequence where I think it's like the Iron Stomach brother, though, like the one that's an accountant. Mm-hmm. In the final game, they're getting destroyed by Team Evil, like physically destroyed. They're not getting beaten by him. It's a 0-0 game. They're like fighting to the death, essentially, with all their different, like they're equaling each other out. The brother, he calls somebody on the phone. You don't know who he's calling, but he starts going, he's like, "Yes, I've kept this secret for 20 years. I love you. Please tell your wife I just said that." When he said that, I fucking lost it.
And it's just, I love the entire sequence when they're playing Team Puma or whatever, where the guy's like, "It must be," he just keeps saying over and over again, "It must be an optical illusion." But they just keep scoring and then celebrating and then score. It's just score. Score.
It's so good. God, it's so good. And then there's like the random times that they like have like musical numbers. There's like random like choreographed musical numbers for no real reason. And of course we get my favorite sign, I think, in any movie, which is just the wall that says "no peeing on the wall."
There is so much to love about this movie because the choreography is awesome. It's out there, but like, it's awesome.
Yeah, and it works as like an over the top like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon style like martial arts movie. You know, it's, except it's got soccer balls like thrown in there as well.
And like, so I have praised Japanese, Korean, and Chinese movies, and I was not disappointed at all watching this. Like, it is the perfect amount of over the top mixed with a good action and good comedy that it's just amazing. It's the second movie I've watched that earns the title of cinematic masterpiece.
Gordon Bombay, Stephen Chow, same level.
All right, next movie. We're doing Shaolin Soccer, the team, versus the Mighty Ducks.
Shaolin 2. Shaolin Soccer Ducks.
They're going to teach Fulton Reed how to kick the ball as fast as he hits a slap shot.
Right. They're just going to tie Goldberg to the soccer net and destroy him with magically hard soccer kicks.
Except Goldberg learns from Iron Gut and they just bounce off.
Fucking Goldberg. Oh, yeah. That's the thing with this movie, like the sports cliche. They obviously have like the evil team versus the ragtag group of misfits and all that. The sudden showing up of a random player at halftime of the big game, all that stuff, big injuries that cause them that player to show up. And then of course there's just the like montage of like going around and acquiring all of the brothers.
Yeah.
And really what he does, he goes around, he pitches this ridiculous notion of like playing soccer with Kung Fu, and they're all like, "Fuck you, get out of here."
But then
Then suddenly they stop and they're like, "You know what? Maybe we should do this."
And then
like five of them.
The first, like when they're playing soccer against like the thug team that Golden Leg brings in to just kick the shit out of them.
Right. Living hell out of them.
They all like find their kung fu and they're all bowing to each other. And Golden Leg comes out and he's like, "No, the honor's mine."
Right. It's just so, it's so goofy, but it's perfect for the tone of the movie. And Stephen Chow, like, especially when you watch Kung Fu Hustle, he's really good at being like serious martial arts guy and then suddenly like switching on a dime to be just silly or like immediately like making fun of himself. It's yeah. Absolutely, or like pointing out how ridiculous the situation he's in is. It's so funny. But yeah, this movie is, you really just gotta watch it. It's just so goofy and hilarious. There's really no other way to describe it except for the fact that it's a soccer movie with martial arts.
And we were like the initial plan was to watch Kicking and Screaming, and god damn it, did we make the right choice to switch to this movie.
Now that's the Will Ferrell Kicking and Screaming, not like the other Kicking and Screaming, which is like a serious movie from like the 50s or 60s, I think. But yeah, well, that's the thing, like what other soccer movies like could we have done? Like soccer is the biggest sport in the world. And like we are in the one country in the world that doesn't give a flying shit about soccer, and the ones that do definitely don't want to watch the MLS. You know, we want to watch like European soccer or football. But what were we gonna watch? Like Ladybugs? That's just sad and definitely probably doesn't hold up. You know,
I looked up the best soccer movies, and all it comes up is football movies.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like, and then there's like Bend It Like Beckham, which is that even about soccer, or is that like a coming of age story for like a girl? You know, I can't even remember. But I'm sure
there's like there's like a Pele movie or Pele or
right. And then the other option for that would be historically based, you know, dramas on soccer and all that. And we already did Miracle. Like, I didn't really want to, like for basketball, I didn't really want to talk about Hoosiers.
Yeah.
I could give a shit about that movie. But, like, Blue Chips would have been interesting, but that's not really a movie. It's just kind of, like, a reason to give the Shaquille O'Neal story a fictional retelling. But it's weird. Maybe our European listeners, and we know you're out there, can recommend some, like, good soccer movies that aren't.
You could go with She's the Man, the Amanda Bynes movie where she dresses up like a guy to be on the soccer team.
Girl Ladybugs, you know, ironically enough. But like maybe our European listeners can help us out with some good soccer movies that aren't about, you know, Pele or David Beckham and the Spice Girls or some shit. I don't know what soccer is anymore. Shaolin soccer has ruined it all for me. I want it to be Shaolin soccer.
Yeah, that's I mean, now what's the point of watching a soccer game unless kung fu's involved?
Exactly.
And superpowers.
Exactly. It's just boring now. Like it circled back around to boring. But all right, yeah, that's probably all I gotta say about Shaolin soccer.
So be, right. The biggest it was the highest praise I could have given a movie to say it's on the same tier as D2, The Mighty Ducks.
That's high praise.
That's high praise. Imagine Nicolas Cage came into the movie. Like, no, he just speaks English, doesn't understand what anyone else is saying, and doesn't do anything except be present.
He's just Nicolas Cage. He's like, it's like he walked into the set.
You know, I think if you pitch that to someone, if you pitched that to Nicolas Cage, you would have been like, I'm in.
How am I not in that movie? Because at one point, everything is on fire.
Yeah. At one point, there's a soccer ball surrounded by a tornado.
Yep. And it kicks up like a windstorm going by. Yeah. On it. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, we didn't even mention like the special effects. This is 2001. The special effects look bad, but they also look good for what they are, you know?
Yeah, they're not meant to be amazing special effects. Like,
right.
It's meant to look silly when the soccer ball is hitting someone and they're flying 50 feet away.
Right. Or when he, like, kicks the ball to the moon. Like, yeah. He accidentally kicks the ball straight up in the air and they all have to, like, take downtime to wait till the ball comes back down. Like, playing cards and shit like that. Then they hear it, like, break the atmosphere again. Like, oh, wait, here it comes.
Oh, the scene where he's going one-on-one against the evil goalie is nuts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That like flowing like Pantene Pro V like ad of a guy. He's got this flowing like hair and all that.
Yeah.
And he's just like the best goalie there is.
I also, in the first soccer fight scene, when he goes to kick the guy, but like stops just short and you just see the breeze blow his hair back.
Right. Yeah, it's, oh man, it's so good. And of course there's, well, then there's of course like the makeover of the love interest, like in the middle of the movie. Apparently that like terrifying makeover that she gets is apparently like an ode or homage to some like Chinese actress in like the 80s or 90s. You know, like that's what she looked like all the time. It's like, whoa, that's kind of terrifying.
And I never thought I'd be so entertained by a scene where she's making steamed buns.
Yeah. Yeah, where she's doing her like Tai Chi. That's like how she cooks this.
And then he starts singing to. He's like, "That's how I praise. I praise people through song."
Right.
And I don't think he does it again throughout the entire movie. I don't think.
Aside from the random like street like dance number. No. Yeah. But yeah,
God, that's a great dance number too.
So good. It's just it's absolutely a recommend. It's one of my favorite like. Sports movies to watch too, because it's just so goofy. Like
yeah.
it takes nothing seriously, but yet at the same time a lot of shit is kind of taken seriously.
Get in the Cage featuring Stephen Chow.
That's right. That's high praise. So that was Shaolin Soccer. How's your beer, Mike?
Doing good. About halfway through my first pint. It's a beer I could drink a lot of. It's refreshing. Nothing, it's not super heavy. It's a solid pilsner.
Yeah. And my Flying Fish Mango Kayak, I'm about to open number two. Oh, there we go. All right. Yeah. So I got number two open. Oh, and it's 5.2%, if I didn't mention it before. And it is quite enjoyable drinking it out of my drunken teacher's lounge mug. And, it is good. So now we will move on to the movie I forgot was actually what it is. I kind of had fonder recollections of this movie than I think were warranted. But
we forgot to Mantating, the guy who plays Golden, like passed away this year. So rest in peace.
Oh, rest in peace, young man. But and also we also forgot to mention how Iron Head's boss treats him at the club when he's berating him. He just smashes bottles over his head.
I also completely forgot that scene where Iron Head is smoking a cigarette and he gives him a yellow card. He's like, "What? I can't smoke," and then puts it out on the ref's hand.
Right. That's kind of shit. Like I see like regular like club like European soccer mm-hmm. doing. Like some hooligan walking up with a fucking cigarette, just putting it on the ref.
Like that, like Vinnie Curry in Euro Trip type of soccer player.
Oh, Vinnie Jones.
Vinnie Jones.
Yeah, exactly. Just like walking up, or like Reese Ifans in The Replacements. You know, like putting a cigar out in like a player's face, and then just walking out onto the pitch. You know.
Yeah.
But all right, so. Now it's time for 1992's White Men Can't Jump, directed by Ron Shelton, who did Bull Durham, Cobb, Tin Cup, and the wonderful Hollywood Homicide.
I went into this movie with, like, I went into Miracle and Rudy knowing what they were. With higher expectations, because, like, I'd seen it before, but, like, I don't know, I guess I didn't see it, like, I didn't process what the movie actually was, I guess, the last time I saw it.
Yeah. Last time I saw this movie was easily 20 years ago. And I remember thinking it was more of, I remember it more as Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson hustling guys like the whole time. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't see it as them like hating each other, fucking each other over at first, and then like it going into this weird relationship drama for a while between Woody and Rosie, and then I completely forgot she's on fucking Jeopardy, you know. Rest in peace, Alex Trebek.
That's this. I don't know, like I feel like it would have been a better option to lean more into almost a buddy comedy type with Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson. Like, I feel like you would have got a much more enjoyable movie.
Yeah, because Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes are, like, good together.
Yeah.
And Wesley Snipes is hilarious as this character, mm-hmm. and Woody Harrelson's good at his character, but fucking Rosie Perez. Say what you want about the woman. I'm sure she's a nice woman in real life, but her acting career should have never happened. And in this movie, trying to take her seriously when she says anything that's not crazy Puerto Rican girlfriend, when she says any of like her random facts that she's learned about because she wants to be on Jeopardy one day, that's the dream. Every time she tries to quote unquote sound smart, she sounds like a fucking idiot. And
the scene that fucking gets me is when she's like, I'm thirsty. Woody Harrelson gets up to get her a glass of water.
Oh my God. Kill yourself. Just fucking kill yourself. Because that whole bullshit of, when I say I'm thirsty, that doesn't mean I want water. It's like, well, what the fuck do you mean? She's like, it just means I want you to sympathize with me being thirsty. It's like, no, that's not what that means when people say that shit. They want fucking water or something to drink.
Woody Harrelson's response of throwing the water on her head was the correct response.
Absolutely correct. There's no other option. There is no other option.
Woody Harrelson goes, well, when I say I'm thirsty, that means if anyone has a cup of water, I want a sip.
Exactly. Yeah, he poured the only variation on what he does that is acceptable is after pouring the water on her head, he fires the glass against the wall. You know, that's the only variation of that that I will accept.
I love his line. He's like, all that was in the same magazine.
Yeah, and it's like, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. And then there's Wesley Snipes' wife, mm-hmm. who is like, she's constantly berating because they live in the hood. They live in this shitty apartment complex. They get robbed by their neighbors and no one says anything because they're all pieces of shit. And she's constantly like, we need to get out of this apartment. You got to buy me a house. You got to focus on this. And it's just that stereotypical like nagging black woman wife. And it gets old immediately because you don't see these two as having a loving relationship where he's always fucking up and she's trying to keep him on their straight path. No, apparently he's hustling, working odd jobs as construction, doing his all kinds. He's got little side gigs that he's trying to make legitimate money on. And he's just like hustling basketball just makes him the most money.
Yeah.
And she doesn't really, she wants him to have a real job and they want to have a real house and real family. Whereas the relationship that they should have is the one that Woody Harrelson and Rosie Perez have, where it's Harrelson can't stop fucking up and he can't stop betting all of their money in situations where he shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, because it seems like Wesley Snipes is actually trying his best to, like, he's in a bad situation, but he's making the most out of it that he can.
He's literally hustling to survive, you know? And she treats him like he's this biggest piece of shit, even though he's like doing literally everything he possibly can.
That's something to say with the writing, because clearly this guy doesn't know how to write a decent female character.
Oh, absolutely not, because these are about as stereotypical and stock characters as you get.
Yeah, they're so stereotypical. I mean, like, he must have bad relationships with women or something, because like he makes them both hateful and completely unlikable.
Unlikable. Almost everybody in this movie is unlikable.
Yeah.
There's also the sign, like, you know, it's a 90s movie because mm-hmm. Kadeem Hardison is there and Yo Mama jokes are present.
Yeah.
We spend quite a lot of time in the beginning of this movie on Yo Mama jokes. And I was like, wow, am I back in sixth grade again? Holy shit. But yeah. And that's the thing with Rosie Perez. It's like you said, like him not being able to write a female character. With Rosie Perez, she's a combination of two stereotypes. The one stereotype of like the psychotic Puerto Rican girlfriend. Then there's the girl from the hood who doesn't seem intelligent is actually super smart. You know, it's that combination of the two. You're like, wow, this is, if I was either of these two, I would be incredibly offended.
That's something like, it's a problem in Hollywood. Like, writers do not, it seems like a majority of writers don't know how to put like decent female characters to the page.
And especially not in the 90s.
Yeah. You
know? Especially not in the 90s.
But I mean, like, look at Black Widow. Like, come on.
Did you see Black Widow?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not good.
No.
And she's barely even in it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, come on, what are we fucking mm-hmm. doing? It's like the studio was like, you know what? We have to give Scarlett one more movie. It's in her contract. And she says she'll kill everyone in the world if we make her not do, you know, any other thing but this Black Widow movie. So I guess we'll give her Black Widow. What should we do with it? I'll make it after Civil War and make it suck. Oh, okay. I'm sure she'll be happy with that. You know
what? A little off track, but if this movie came out, end of 2017, like, you know, after Civil War, I might have given it at least somewhat of a pass because of when it came out. But right. Releasing it like 5 years too late just exemplifies everything wrong with the movie.
It's an absolute afterthought. It's all it is. And that's kind of like in White Men Can't Jump, the relationship that Wesley has with his wife. It's almost just an afterthought. It's like, okay, we spent so much time on Harrelson and Perez that we also have Snipes here who's got a family. We got to come up with something. Let's just have his wife nag him about going straight. Let's just do that. You know, I guess that'll work, you know? And when this movie should just be these two dudes hustling people, getting hustled at one point and having to fight back, you know, claw their way back to being the top hustlers in LA.
Yeah. The last major thing should have been when they, what are the two like legendary street ballers? Like King and
Duck.
Like, that should have been their last, like, okay, we beat them, we're on top.
Yeah, exactly. And yet, instead, we spend so much time with the two guys in that two-on-two tournament with Woody Harrelson shit-talking like crazy. All of those guys, and just getting them angry and pissed off. We spend so much time on those guys, and they mean nothing.
Yeah.
They mean literally nothing.
No, I mean, what does, like, if you go into this movie looking for a movie about basketball, you're going to be disappointed because it's a movie about Woody Harrelson's relationship with characters, and it's not done that well.
Yeah, I mean, but, like, with the basketball itself, like, the street ball's done well.
Yeah. You know,
it captures the tone of it. It captures the atmosphere of, like, the world, like, the people watching the game and, like, the game itself. Mm-hmm. It gets the players. It actually gets the basketball right until they drop the net to 9.5 feet so Woody Harrelson can dunk at the end. But that's not important right now. You know, but it's – the actual basketball is good because it is what it is. It's street ball. Now, if this were supposed to be actual basketball, that might be a bit of a different story because I don't think they'd be able to do that.
I was watching a review of this, and they were like, this doesn't work. Like, these wouldn't work in the NBA. I'm like, it's 2-on-2 street ball. Like, come on. What are you looking for here?
It's absolutely not supposed to be that.
Now, I wasn't going to speak on that personally because, frankly, I don't know what the 90s street ball scene in L.A. looked like.
Obviously, I do not either, but being a teenager, you played fucking street ball, you know? Yeah. So it was like, it's very similar. I'm sure in LA, there's more of a hustle and an economy to it, I'm sure. But I'm sure that's how it was in Philly, too.
Yeah. But this movie, so it really, Woody Harrelson is the main character, and it focuses on his, like, personality flaws and how that affects his relationships. Except the only person that the movie makes you care about is Wesley Snipes, and you don't get that, like, not enough of the movie is portioned for that relationship.
Yeah, and the best part about Wesley Snipes' character is, aside from being Wesley Snipes, is that he is essentially a not completely evil version of Simon Phoenix from Demolition Man. That's the character he's playing. If Simon Phoenix were a street ball hustler, that's the character he would be.
I'm laughing. I was so I brought up when we watched Waterboy that I think it was a Rich Eisen show. They called up a draft analyst and had like four movie football stars. I think for that it was Forrest Gump, Bobby Boucher, Johnny Utah, and Jamie Foxx in
Any Given Sunday. Yeah.
I think they ranked it Jamie Foxx, Bobby Boucher, Forrest Gump, and then Johnny Utah.
I mean, they're wrong, but we all know that.
with that, they did it for basketball too. I didn't actually recognize the characters except for Wesley Snipes in it, because I don't watch basketball movies much.
Right.
But Wesley Snipes' character was, I think, drafted second among the four characters.
And his character is Sidney Dean. Yeah. Because I remember he had a weird name.
Yeah.
Like two first names almost.
I think they called him much shorter Gary Payton.
Ironically, Gary Payton is in this movie at some
point. Yeah, I know.
And he's one of the guys, I think, in the tournament that we just see playing that aren't particularly like focused on. I think they're just like one of the blow-by guys.
Yeah.
But like, that's hilarious. Like, one of the best defenders that ever play the game is like an afterthought in this movie.
Yeah.
And I think one of the guys that plays King or Duck, something like that, the two big hustlers, I think one of those guys is actual ex-NBA. I think he's like retired NBA or whatever. I can't remember who it is. I mean, I'm not up on my 70s NBA players, you know.
Now, one thing, this movie had me trying to picture Woody Harrelson playing college basketball.
And well, apparently they went through like legit basketball, like coaching and training. And apparently these dudes, like the coach was like, hey, these guys can play at least D2. You know, they've gotten to be that good. But because they are playing that game and they look natural doing it. Like we've mentioned for a lot of the other sports that we've talked about in these movies, baseball being the one that's the most obvious, at least to me.
Yeah.
When you get an actor to throw something, it never looks natural unless it's supposed to be like something hucked against the wall. But
I think baseball is the sport where you can rely the least on physical ability.
Yeah, especially like basketball, if you're in a movie about it.
Basketball, if you're athletic and coordinated, you can make it look like you know how to play basketball to a degree.
Right, yeah.
And same with football. Like, realistically, if they're only showing a small clip of football and all you gotta do is hit a guy, as long as you are semi-athletic, you can do it.
Yeah, or if you have to throw a football, as long as someone's taught you the proper motion, you can throw the ball. They're not going to show if it's a perfect spiral or not, or if it went 50 yards. You know, that's not the point. Like, you just got to look natural to be released. And of course, the stock footage of Tom Brady throwing an 80-yard bomb, that's what they'll use, you know.
With baseball, like, if you're showing someone pitching, like, pitching, the windup is very important. And you can, like, any baseball player can point out and they're like, that's a terrible windup.
Yeah, and throwing a baseball, it's one of the most obvious things, aside from probably throwing a football, it's one of the most obvious things you can tell someone's never done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so when you get somebody on screen, like an actor like Charlie Sheen, who in Major League was an actual high school pitcher, so he looks natural. But then you show Harris playing, and obviously he's an older school guy, so he kind of has to have that like old school like mechanics. Like, he's not gonna look like Aaron Nola or Chris Sale, who have very specific mechanics for what their body types are.
Yeah,
like an old man's mechanics in like the 70s and 80s looked exactly the same, and it's just them lifting their leg, throwing the ball, and then getting ready to field it. There was nothing unique about it. It was all the same. But so you just got to look natural to do that. They're not showing where the pitch is going.
Yeah.
But in basketball for this movie, these guys are playing basketball. And for the most part, we're seeing literally everything they do. Mm-hmm. And aside from the four, you know, like the four like boxes that Wesley Snipes has to stand on to shoot over some of the guys in the first two games, because they're both like 7 foot, you know, we're not seeing that. But also, we're not seeing them crank the net down for Woody Harrelson when he has to dunk at the end.
Yeah.
But it just, you have to look natural. So if you do get coaching and you get to like D2 level, that's obviously mid-level college ball. You know, a lot of guys don't get to that point. But if you can look good doing it and be that good, you're going to look great on camera.
Yeah, this made me think of Ricochet when they're playing basketball in the beginning. And they show Denzel go up for a dunk, and then they show a clearly different person who is not Denzel hanging from the rim.
Yeah, they show Denzel going up, and it's David Robinson who's making the dunk.
Yeah.
The fucking Admiral or Carl Malone is making that dunk. Because it ain't Denzel.
If only, you know what would have saved this movie? If randomly Ice-T was on the phone and just gave a rhyming, like, clue to do something.
He gives that clue to, like, one of the other street ball players. To, like, because at one point in this movie, Wesley Snipes hustles Woody Harrelson on his own team because he's trying to get back at him for hustling the first time. So they should have had, like, Ice-T show up and be like, just say some random shit. And then that, like, Snipes gives him a nod. And then he, like, throws the rest of the game. Because it was in L.A. It was in fucking Watts at one point, which is where I'm pretty sure Ice-T would have been at the time.
You know what? I neglect. This is on me. Ricochet should have been in the cinematic masterpiece category along with D2 and Shaolin Soccer.
It should have. It absolutely should have.
It is in there. That's on me.
Yeah, I am shocked and appalled, but at least you have noticed your mistake. And this is the question obviously everyone has based in the title itself invokes the question. Is this the most racist sports movie ever made? I think it might be. Because it's not just the black guys not trusting that a white guy can play basketball. Mm-hmm. That stereotype aside, it's literally how all of the other people in this movie act. Rosie Perez is the most stereotypical Puerto Rican psychopath.
And the fact that Woody Harrelson brings it up, like, anytime anyone questions him, like, what, it's because I'm white?
Yeah, it is, because you are the only white man in this movie. But, and it's also, like, just, like, the one guy in the first game, which was funny to me, when Wesley Snipes is going to put, like, the $500 in, the guy that only has, like, $200. So he goes to his car, he grabs a ski mask and a gun, and he goes to rob the local liquor store. But the guy immediately recognizes him. He's like, what are you doing? And then he just pulls off his mask. He's like, how much you want for this gun? He's like, I'll sell you this gun. You probably need it. But it's like, really? Every black man just has a gun in his car, and he goes to rob something with a ski mask? What are we doing?
There's a good shot that this is, in fact, the most racist movie, sports movie.
Right, and but that's the thing. It's also from 1992. You know, it's that back then we still had stand-up comics whose entire routine was black guys do it like this, white guys do it like this, and it's God. Again, I've said it numerous times on this podcast. The 90s were a fucking garbage time to be alive. Everything was fucking horrible in the 90s.
Hang on. D2 the Mighty Ducks came out in the 90s.
Okay, further the racial stereotype, because that's all white kids. Except for two, both of which suck. Oh, and then there's the Oreo line. So yeah, they're in there as well. But it's like, God damn it. Because when was Rodney King? Like, Rodney King was around 92, right?
Probably.
Like when he got beat, 1991 is what it was. So yeah, it was the year before this movie came out. It was happening when this was filmed. They filmed this on location. Rodney King probably got beat up down the fucking street during filming. It's like, this is what we're doing? Really? Come on! Because we're not even focusing on like the racial dynamics. What we're focusing on is the relationships between these two guys and their wives, you know? We're not even focusing on the race. It's pretty much immediately dismissed that white guys can in fact jump and play basketball almost immediately. So we're not worried about that, because then the running gag becomes that no one else believes that.
Yeah.
You know, but our main characters, our heroes do. And it's like, okay, but then again, their reputation for hustling in LA, how long could they possibly do that? You got to figure, you do it enough to the wrong people, your rep's getting around. Like, don't play these guys. If this white guy shows up when you're playing Sidney Dean, don't fucking let him pick him. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's always the thing with, like, these, like, it's also the thing with, like, Impractical Jokers. How long can you do that shit without people recognizing you?
I don't know if I've officially said it on here, but I've officially said it in the real world, so that counts as well, but I hate that fucking show. I think it's the dumbest fucking show that's ever happened, and I hate the fact that those morons are millionaires because of it. I fucking hate it. I absolutely hate it. And It's, but then again, it's like this, like there's shit about this movie, like Rosie Perez, I mentioned, like she's fine in Birds of Prey, whatever stupid title, Harley Quinn. She's fine in that movie as an older actress who's good at this, but young Rosie Perez's voice is like nails on a fucking chalkboard. And when she's on, the most egregious felony this movie commits is when she's on Jeopardy. And the answer is Mount Vesuvius. She says Mount Vesuvius, and somehow the judges let her get away with it. No, Alex Trebek would never let that shit happen. He would never let it fly, and he'd never let her fucking forget that she mispronounced Vesuvius. You know, so she is not winning with her goddamn accent.
And also, when she said the rebounds leader, Babe Ruth.
Just get out. Just leave. Just fucking go. Because you got to be kidding me that you didn't, in all of your studying, didn't cover sports. Like, did you not think? And that's the cliche with Jeopardy, though, and still happens to this day. Whenever the sports category comes up, no one ever gets it, and except for the dude that won all the games recently, who was like a gambler. Of course, he got him because that's what he did before he was on Jeopardy. He gambled on sports, you know. But like every time there's a sports question, no one ever gets it right, and it's always like YouTube like meme fodder, you know, because they just can't do it. Like, but no, of course they know seven different foods that start with Q.
Yeah.
Which, when you listen to those questions, if you don't know the answers to those, you're a fucking idiot. If you don't know what a quail is or a quiche, come on, what are we doing? She's not exactly breaking Jeopardy records. She's not Ken Jennings in this movie.
Yeah. Hell, she's not even Aaron Rodgers in Celebrity Jeopardy.
Yeah, right, exactly. She's more like Sean Connery in Celebrity Jeopardy.
Hey, but at least he made me laugh.
Exactly. Yeah. This is just sad. And that, speaking of that, how did Saturday Night Live not ever feature someone doing Rosie Perez impression on Celebrity Jeopardy? Like, how did that never happen?
I'm not sure enough people know who Rosie Perez is.
Well, you got to figure Maya Rudolph was going to do it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, somebody would have had to do it, and she would have been great. But still, you know, it's like, come on. And Jeopardy, really? And then she's like, she has her winnings. And, oh, God, I fucking hate her. I just fucking hate her. I can't stand her. Can't stand it.
Now, and granted, the one thing in the movie that I thought was actually pretty good was she said, if you even gamble with my money, we're done for good.
Yeah. And she does, to the movie's credit, stick to that. Yeah. You know? And that is the downbeat of the ending where Woody is now alone because he did what he shouldn't have done yet again. And even though he won and he has money now and he can promise to not do it again, we all know he's going to do it again, you know, because that's what he does.
That's the thing. Woody doesn't get like the relationship between Woody and Wesley gets development, but Woody himself does not learn from his mistakes in the movie.
Absolutely not. You're led to believe that he has at the end, but it's too little too late and the movie's over, you know? Yeah. And it's really just a matter of him being shocked that she'd left. It's not him being like, oh, this is on me. It's more like, I can't believe she followed through with it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's also just, we haven't even talked about like the actual like sports cliches in this movie because they're there, you know. There is obviously the very specific cliche of white guys not being able to play basketball, but in sports movies, they always had the crazy trick play to win the game.
Yeah.
What happens at the end of this? They win with a crazy trick alley-oop to the white guy who allegedly can't jump, according to the title. And who fails at dunking three times, four, five as well, in the middle of this movie when he tries to bet Wesley Snipes that he can dunk and he simply cannot do it. So again, I want to see the flight of stairs that Woody took to get to that 9.5
the trampoline.
Right, to get to that 9.5. Yeah, like when is Wesley actually standing off camera with his hands out, like ready to like give him the old hand catapult like he does in the one scene? Like, come on, Woody, we gotta do this.
For some reason, I thought Woody Harrelson was shorter than he is. He's 5'10". Like, for some reason, I thought he was I thought Woody Harrelson was shorter than me, and he's an inch taller than me.
Yeah, and he's, like, I always picture Woody Harrelson as being, I don't know why, I always picture him as being the same height as his co-stars, always. Mm-hmm. Like, he's never, because Wesley Snipes is 5'9", you know? And like, yeah, he always seems like he's the exact same height as everyone else. And like Matthew McConaughey is 6 foot. It's only a 2-inch difference, you know? Yeah. So when him and he's in True Detective with him, mm-hmm, it's like, oh, they seem like equals. Like Woody Harrelson's height to me is like always changing, no matter what, depending on what movie he's in, you know?
Also his hair. I don't know what the deal with his hair is, but...
Well, he had it in the 90s because this was at the very tail end of Cheers.
Yeah.
Because Cheers ended in 93. This obviously came out in 92. So if I remember correctly from the beginning of the pandemic when my wife and I watched all of Cheers, I think he was missing from a good amount of the last season because he was probably filming this movie.
But I feel like they're always doing weird things with his hair.
Yeah. And I think a lot of his characters, like Kingpin being the chief among them. Speaking of Kingpin,
yeah,
the only bowling movies we possibly could have talked about were that and Big Lebowski, which we've already talked about.
So. And Shaolin Soccer, because at the end, apparently they're bowling world bowling champions.
Right. Exactly. Again, another great thing in that movie. But
apparently they're like world. How many different things do they list that they're world champions of it?
Oh, I don't even remember. I don't even remember. I was too busy cheering in my living room at the cinematic masterpiece, as Mike says. But
hey, don't say that sarcastically because I'm serious.
No, well, that was dead serious. When you say cinematic masterpiece, I absolutely agree.
But with
this fucking movie, it's God. There's so much, and like I was watching it the whole time. I was like, is someone gonna get shot and killed? I mean, that's what we need. We need these mobsters that are following them and is the driving force of Rosie Perez and Woody Harrelson's fucking relationship to do this hustle bit. These guys, like, they let him go. They're like, okay, we got our money, thanks, buddy. They do like a fake dead man shot of him for their little scrapbook that they have, which leads you to believe that everyone else in that scrapbook is just faking to be dead as hell.
Yeah, they're the world's nicest hitmen.
Right.
I don't want to kill you, dude. But I need to make it look like you're dead. So can we get a picture?
Yeah, it like undercuts all the tension facing with these guys. And then there's this scene in the because after Woody Harrelson gets hustled by Wesley during the game, during their quote unquote loss that Wesley Snipes throws, Rosie Perez goes to their apartment, they confront him, and Rosie Perez and Wesley Snipes' wife talk in the kitchen, and she's like, give us our money back. And the wife's like, fuck you. And then they have this like talk, and you find out what the reason is for these mobsters to be after them. Now, apparently Rosie Perez bought a car from them. And then it turns out that, as she says, she can't make the payments. So she drags Harrelson into this shit, and she has him throw a basketball game for these guys. It's all her fucking fault to begin with. And then we're led to believe that Woody's the piece of shit in this film.
Yeah.
I don't think so. He is a piece of shit, yes, but not for the reasons that she wants us to believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is it each week we always, except for baseball. Baseball's the one week that there's always one movie that we're like,
I think it's just because a lot of, and I'm going to be kind of shitty to Karate Kid 2 as well. Well, not Karate Kid 2, Karate Kid, the first one. I'm going to be kind of shitty to that one as well because I'm not a giant fan of that movie, but they're for different reasons. This movie is, there's just so much unlikable shit about it. And
it really comes down to the writing for the most part, because exactly. I think outside of Rosie Perez, the actors work fairly well.
Absolutely. They really do. It's just, they are written as assholes.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in the 90s, because everything was supposed to be extreme and hip and all that shit, like maybe they were great, like portrayals of 90s adults. You know, I was 10 when this movie came out, so I couldn't speak on that accurately, but when it comes to this movie, it's the characters of Rosie Perez and the bullshit that Woody Harrelson does that pisses me off the most about it. With like Rudy, you could say that's bad writing as well, because Rudy is a goddamn psychopath. He is a relentless case for mental illness is what he is. And I hate that movie simply for the fact that he's supposed to be the good guy and we're supposed to cheer for this little shit. And no right-minded human being would ever find him likable enough to cheer for. You want him put in the goddamn ground, you know? And then, of course, there's Miracle. Miracle, I didn't hate.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I didn't love because it's the feel-good story of the century, you know? We defeated the evil empire in a hockey game and we never did it again. You know, that's the little tagline that they didn't put on that movie. And it never happened again. You know,
but it happened once. And that's still the only world. That's the only gold medal that gets talked about in hockey, though.
Exactly. Because it's basically the only one we've had. It's the only one we've had ever since.
And we never let them forget it.
Right. Yeah. Meanwhile, Russia and Canada are fucking drowning in gold medals. And they're like, oh, yeah, no. 1980. Yeah. Big loss for us. Still haven't forgot it. Pass me the gold medal to light my cigarette.
I imagine Putin's kind of like the coach in the Mighty Ducks that, like, they have the second place banner up. He's like, I wish they'd take that one down.
We didn't even mention that when we talked about that. I'm so glad you brought that up. In the Mighty Ducks, when they have that scene and he says, I wish they wouldn't hang that one up there. You know goddamn well that Lane Smith purposely makes sure that that one stays up just in case Gordon Bombay walks through those doors again. You know that's why that's up there. It's the only reason why it's up there. It's just the fuck with Gordon Bombay and the off chance he walks through the doors again. It's like we mentioned with League of Their Own. It, like, Kit, like, the long play by Dottie to Kit, like, the long game of humiliating her, making her second guess herself for the rest of her life. That's what Lane Smith has done since that, like, Gordon Bombay as a child. He's playing the long game.
The grudge that this somehow full-time peewee hockey coach held against his best former player.
Well, it's probably because he knew what happened to Gordon Bombay. He knew he went on to be a six-figure hotshot lawyer. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to take him down a peg or two if he ever walks through these doors again. You know? I'm going to show him that a lifetime peewee hockey coach has got to step up on this man who could buy and sell my family. With a yellow banner that sticks out as a second place banner.
You know, he's probably like a used car salesman that sponsors the Hawks and is just coaching them.
I mean, there's no way. Or he's some sort of, like, mafioso. Because, you know, like, Banks's dad is, like, all for him. He's like, it's like this cult of the Hawks, you know?
Yeah, and
he's got connections. He's got little lawyer connections, all that shit. You know, he's got some sort of waste management business in Minnesota. Like, he's like, he's allegedly running.
So they have, this became the Mighty Ducks podcast part two, but they have the Mighty Ducks TV show on Disney Plus.
That is true. Yes. And aren't the Mighty Ducks in that movie like the Hawks now?
Yeah, but pretty much. Like, okay. It's like the Mighty Ducks got so famous after the championship that it became like the top tier hockey team that you had to try out for, and you had to go to all the hockey clinics and stuff to continue to be on the Ducks.
Of course, because now they are a professional hockey team, as they, they named a professional hockey team after us, as Charlie believes says in like three, I think. But, yeah, so anyway, that's been our bonus part of Mighty Ducks. Yeah,
you know, so. I'm always happy to talk about the Ducks, you know, quack, quack, quack.
Anything, quack, 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 Mr. Ducksworth, that's right. Anything to not get us to talk about how angry white men can't jump in. And then, of course, seeing Alex Trebek alive and well with that glorious mustache. And I was like, no, I do not accept this.
This will not stand.
This will not fly. This injustice will not stand, man, to quote the dude. But anyway, so that's probably enough about white men. Because again, like, even though we mentioned with soccer, like, other basketball movies that we could even think of would be like, again, Will Ferrell, like, semi-pro, which is like, obviously, a comedic minor league basketball team. And then, of course, there's Hoosiers, which we already did Rudy, so fuck Hoosiers.
Could have done Like Mike, which is like the worst kids sports movie.
We also did Space Jam, the original Space Jam. I've seen 10 minutes of the new Space Jam, and I wanted to kill myself. So I wasn't going to do that shit again. But It's there's not many. And then of course there's
like Uncle Drew.
Right. Yeah, Uncle Drew apparently is supposed to be good. But well, I can't remember what movie it was. I think it's the Miracle Guy, the director. He also did that recent Ben Affleck movie where he's like an alcoholic basketball coach or some shit like that. And then of course there's like Coach Carter. There's there's all sorts of like motivational, inspirational basketball movies that feature these actors that are well out of their league for these movies. And it's like, come on, Affleck, you're better than this. Come on, Samuel Jackson, you're fucking better than Coach Carter. You know, what are you fucking doing? And then, you know, who is it in Hoosiers? Is it Hackman?
I think it's Hackman.
Hoosiers, right? So it's like, what are you doing? Like, Hoosiers is, again, it's a movie that makes Indiana happy. So what the fuck were we thinking with sports movies in the 80s and 90s? You know, who gives a shit about Indiana? Let us not forget that Gary, Indiana, one of the top five murder cities in the country, and we should know about that because we got three of them ourselves. You know, fucking Gary, Indiana is responsible for Michael Jackson and Axl Rose. You want to talk about two musicians that are fucking dysfunctional as hell? Yeah, that's a product of Indiana. What is Rudy? Dysfunctional as fuck psychopath. He could probably be, you know, right up there with John Wayne Gacy, you know, who I believe might also be from Indiana. But
whenever I hear a serial killer, I'm not sure where they're from. I'm like, probably Indiana or Ohio.
Indiana or Wisconsin, you know, or Ohio. Yeah. But it's like, you know, so this has been the part of our podcast where we alienate our Midwest listeners. We're just kidding, Indiana. I'm sure you're all fine Colts fans.
Hey, the Colts are like my second favorite football team. All right.
And I'm sure they're fun to root for. I mean, I enjoy that. What's that HGTV show where the ginger mother and daughter like do like renovations on houses. They're fairly interesting. They're in Indiana.
You know? I enjoy the Pat McAfee show. He's in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I'm sure the Indy 500 brings a lot of good people to the state. But we won't be talking about NASCAR or any more football or anything like that. Because that's the other thing. NASCAR. We're not talking about NASCAR at all. I mean,
no, we could have done Ricky Bobby.
We already did.
Oh yeah, we already did.
We already did though. I mean, and I will not put myself through watching the fucking Cars movies just for that shit, you know? Yeah. But yeah, there's no point. So like there's so many sports movies that we could have got to. And plus we'll get into more towards the end of the episode. But why don't we do our next beer check-in? So Mike, talk about your beer while I grab my third.
I am about midway through my second one, and there's not too much to say about this, but it's from New Jersey Beer Co. They're from North Bergen, New Jersey, which is up there, Bergen County.
North Bergen.
Great. But yeah, I mean, it's a solid pilsner. If you like that type of beer, you'll like this. And I do like pilsners.
If you like a pilsner, you'll like a pilsner. That's a quote for the poster.
I mean, there's not too, like, they didn't try to do anything too different with it. They just made a solid pilsner.
Yeah, nice. And like I said, like, sometimes that's all it takes, you know? Just make a solid beer that's supposed to be what it is. Meanwhile, my Mango Kayak by Flying Fish in Somerdale is quite delicious. I like a beer that has, like, a hint of fruit to it, you know?
I do like a bit delicious. Of fruit. That's, I was at a bar drinking Bonesaw, their Queensicle, which is like their orange beer. That's delicious.
Yeah, I reviewed that on one of these episodes recently, but
I reviewed Irish Queen, which is there.
Yeah, there you go. And our previous guest and soon to be returning guest at some point, Steve. I didn't even think of it. We're doing that guy from Philly next week, which there is a story about Steve with Rocky IV. So maybe I'll try to get him to come on next week and see if he can talk about Rocky, because it's amazing. but anyway, that's for next week. We will get to we'll get to Adrian in Philadelphia next week. But first, we have to talk about New Jersey's own Daniel LaRusso and his trips to California and his experiences as a new kid in California and in the Karate Kid.
This movie, just all right. I'm sure you have more negative feelings for it than I do. But because of this movie, Cobra Kai was made. And that is a damn good TV show.
All right. So here's my thing with Karate Kid. It has, for one, we'll just say it's 1984 Karate Kid. The director is John G. Avildsen, and he's responsible, like I said, Rocky and Rocky Five. He skipped out 2, 3, and 4 and Rocky Balboa.
He should have skipped out. He should have skipped out Rocky Five too.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone should have. But he also did Karate Kid Part 2 and 3. So he did this franchise, the original franchise.
So he I will say the Karate Kid Karate Kid 2 and 3, not great movies, but they're pretty entertaining because like they just go full cartoon with it, with their villains and stuff. And sometimes it's fun to cheese it up.
I've seen Karate Kid 2. I remember nothing. I've never seen Karate Kid 3 because I thought that it was one of those things where it's like, no Ralph Macchio, no Karate Kid, you know, situation. You know, it's like Hilary Swank, I don't care. I don't care.
Wait, Ralph Macchio was in Karate Kid 3.
Are you sure? I thought he was like, I'm too good for that.
No, Karate, he was in it, and he goes to Cobra Kai for a little bit.
Oh, that's probably why I didn't give a shit. But, yeah, like, but I saw like Hilary Swank. I was like, I could care less. You know, it's not the fact that she's a girl. It's just like, I don't care. I just don't give a shit by now. You know, it's 1989. I've moved on from the Karate Kid. But of course, there is, yeah, and I'm looking at Mark Crowe's back. Yeah, all the Marita. So, okay. So, yeah. All right. So I roll it back. That wasn't the only reason why I didn't watch Karate Kid 3. I just didn't fucking want to. But
yeah, and that's fair.
So, my thing with this movie, The Karate Kid, I will say the good part first. Okay, I'm gonna do my Stewie compliment sandwich.
Yeah.
First third of the movie, Pat Morita is fucking amazing. The man is just amazing as Mr. Miyagi. Mr. Miyagi. And as Miyagi, he's amazing. Number two, this movie is a fucking cartoon when it comes to the villains, and it falls apart in the actual tournament at the end. Three, back on the high note, it introduced the world, at least it introduced me, to William Zabka as Johnny Lawrence, aka the bully of the 1980s.
You know, people
will say Biff Tannen. I say you put Biff and Bill Zabka, any of his characters in a room together, Billy Zabka walks out of the room 11 times out of 10.
Billy Zabka, I've gained, so I wasn't alive in his heyday. I mostly only knew him for the Karate Kid. But then they bring in, so I'm pretty sure they made Cobra Kai entirely off of the online theory that Billy Zabka is the good guy in Karate Kid and LaRusso's the dickhead. And I'm pretty sure that concept is why they made Cobra Kai. And I'm damn happy that they did it.
Absolutely. I mean, like you just mentioned, Daniel LaRusso is so unlikable. He's such a little piece of shit. Now, granted, this is one of the other complaints I have about this movie, because it's very much the stereotypical new kid in school must die for being a new kid. You know?
Well, wait. Now, Billy Zabka only approaches LaRusso when he thinks he's hitting on his girl. And then, you know, LaRusso goes after him first.
Right. But Johnny almost kills him.
Wait.
Very much could have just kicked him on the ground, like, don't get up. Just don't get up.
You know? Well, the first time after LaRusso goes after him, he trips him and he offers his hand to help him up. And then LaRusso goes after him again. And then he almost kills him.
Right, and then they track him down so yeah, you're right, he is the hero, because then there's the it's twofold, because the same scene is a great thing and a horrible scene, a great thing for pro Daniel LaRusso and then con Daniel LaRusso. The Halloween dance, the costume ball, where Daniel LaRusso is a shower, that is a great fucking costume.
It is.
That is amazing. But two, how did he not know after pulling the hose prank on Johnny when he's rolling a joint in the bathroom? Like, hey, fuck you, dude. Dude's just trying to get high. He's trying to have some fun. He drops the hose on him. How did he not realize that that would be the most obvious costume possible to be able to follow when you're trying to follow the guy who did this shit? Now, does Johnny and the rest of Cobra Kai maybe go overboard before Mr. Miyagi kicks their ass? Probably. They probably do. Now, them running him off the road on their bikes, maybe a bit much, maybe. But still, the reason they want to kick his ass for the most part, and the reason why everyone in this movie
it's reactory. It is reaction to LaRusso's actions.
Right, but still, they do go a bit overboard.
Yeah, of course. Now, they're 80s bullies.
Of course. Now, the other thing is in this movie, there is, in the beginning of the movie, Danny's introduced to his apartment complex friends of rando friend number one. I'm sure the guy's got a name. I just couldn't be bothered to remember it. Now, he is at the beach party. He's playing soccer with these guys. He's kicking the ball around the beach. They're having fun. They're best friends. All of a sudden, Danny's got some new friends in California. The second Danny LaRusso takes a punch to the face and falls to the ground, those friends abandon him.
Yeah.
They're like, fuck this kid. He can't take a punch. We are no longer friends with this asshole. I was like, wait. Whoa. Talk about some thin ice to be on.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Also, back to the Mr. Miyagi kicking Billy Zabka and his friends' asses. They kind of replicate the scene in Cobra Kai where there's bullies picking on the kid who would be Billy Zabka's kind of Danny LaRusso.
Okay.
Right, like, you know, he's starting his own dojo, and the kid's name is Miguel, and so they're picking on him, and then he ends up beating up the kids. And you know what happens? Everyone looks at it as drunk old man just beat up a bunch of high schoolers.
Which is what it is. You're assaulting children, Mr. Miyagi. You are assaulting children. You can't do that. But of course, now there's also, you know, there's also the fact that is Mr. Miyagi a slumlord? He might be a slumlord because nothing in this fucking apartment works and he has to fix them all the time. You know, and all he cares about is just, you know, randomly pruning his bonsai trees and fixing trash bikes.
But wait, is he the owner of the apartment complex?
I took it as he's the maintenance man. So in most apartment complexes, the maintenance guy's also the landlord. So that's what I took it as because, you know, why would it not be him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I always just saw him as the maintenance man, but that's a good point. He probably is the landlord.
Now we haven't mentioned the very beginning of this movie. The opening scene of this movie takes place on location in Harrison, New Jersey, which is just outside of East Orange and by Newark. Now, that's accurate to the character. That is where Danny LaRusso is from. Now, they didn't have to do this because obviously the rest of the movie is filmed in fucking LA. But it's just kind of great that it's like, oh, well, that part of New Jersey is mentioned. When else are we going to see that? Oh, right. The Sopranos, you know, 15 years later. That's when that's going to come back. And speaking of that, my wife has started to rewatch The Sopranos. I've been catching episodes here and there with her. Man, that is a New Jersey show. That really is.
Yeah. Oh, so did Mr. Miyagi own the apartment complex? When Miyagi and LaRusso return from Okinawa in The Karate Kid Part 3, they discover that the apartment complex had been sold.
Oh. So
he was just the maintenance man, not the landlord. Mr. Miyagi is not a slumlord. He's just not a very good maintenance man.
Okay. All right. I take it back. He just sucks as a handyman. When he wants to, because he can fix bikes whenever the fuck he wants. Of course, he does outsource all his work to Daniel under the guise of training him. There's Daniel LaRusso, after painting a fucking fence that looks like the Great Wall of China, he should be Bruce Lee at the end of that shit. Which he kind of is because magically he steals a black belt. Miyagi steals, but has Elizabeth Shue. Hi, 1980s girlfriend, Elizabeth Shue. You know, she steals a black belt from one of the judges' like bags. Don't know how that guy didn't realize that was missing, but he steals and he suddenly like makes his way through the tournament. He doesn't lose a match. Obviously ends up showing up the rest of Cobra Kai, including the dude that is clearly on some sort of meth, you know? And then he of course beats Johnny Lawrence with the very illegal crane kick.
Yep. And they bring that up in Cobra Kai. The first time the first time that they run into each other as adults, the tournament gets brought up. And he's like, you beat me with an illegal kick. And he goes, I don't remember it that way. He's like, it was a kick to the face. That's illegal.
Right. I kicked you in the face 2 minutes before that, and they said no points. You know, but you kicked me in the face, and all of a sudden you win the goddamn tournament? I don't think so. I do not think so. And then, of course, you know, then there's the biggest thing about this movie that I also don't like is it's too fucking long.
Yeah, it is a long movie.
It is 2 hours and 6 minutes. You could shave off about 25 to a half an hour of this movie and it'd be the exact same thing. You know, a lot of these training montages could have been trimmed. You could have gotten rid of the whole scene at the country club where Danny allegedly, or at least in his mind, thinks he sees Elizabeth Shue and Johnny Lawrence just making the fuck out. Mm-hmm. And of course he pulls the thing that every movie boyfriend that sees that does. He leaves too early and doesn't see her punch him in the dick, you know?
Yeah.
And it's all of this shit could have just been cut. It could have just been cut. We didn't need it. But I also like the fact that what we do get is a shot of Elizabeth Shue's parents finding out that Danny LaRusso is not from where they are from. Mm-hmm. He's not from the hills. He's from Reseda. And I bet if they found out he was originally from Newark, New Jersey, their stink eyes that they give him would be more of like outward vomiting that their daughter is somehow in the same aura as a trash bag from North Jersey, you know?
So, all the characters besides Mr. Miyagi are caricatures in this movie.
I would go so far as to say is everyone but the mother. Because Danny's mom, she disappears for a lot of this movie.
Yeah.
Even though she's the reason why they're out there to begin with. Oh, yeah. Let's talk about her for a second. They go out there because she has like some computer job that she has hired for. Yet she gives that up to be a manager at a restaurant? What?
I mean, it was the 90s. I don't know.
It was the 80s, motherfucker.
The
80s. It was 84.
The 80s. The 90s
would have been even dumber to do it. But no, yeah, because like at that restaurant that Danny goes to after trying to go to Cobra Kai and being like, oh, fuck, all my bullies are here. I'm running out. He goes to that restaurant across the street, which is where his mom works. And she tells him that being a manager there and the benefits and all that, it's just a much better job than doing computers. I was like, wow. Wow.
That didn't age well.
Okay. What was that?
That didn't age well.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, and of course, you know, Apple wasn't a thing quite yet. I mean, 1984, they had their big Super Bowl commercial, but they weren't what they are today, you know, and it's like,
I mean, neither was Windows, probably wasn't what it is today.
Windows wasn't a thing yet. You know, yeah. Windows didn't exist yet. But so like when they say that she's going out there for computers, A, she's a woman in the field of computers. That's incredibly rare. So what is her skill set? Does she warrant a job in LA? You know, but no, she's going to give that shit up to be a manager of a restaurant, which is notoriously one of the worst jobs to have.
B, in the 80s, if you're a computers expert, why are you living in Reseda?
Exactly. She should have been in that garage with Wozniak and Jobs, you know, making fucking Apple, you know. But oh man, but yeah, but she's a non-character in this. She shows up just to be a caricature, you know. She really is. She shows up to be a North Jersey Italian mom, you know. And it's
but now all the circumstances surrounding the fact that she's not in the movie are very anti-caricature because she's a computer expert apparently.
Yeah, but when she is on screen, what we get is nothing but North Jersey characters, you know. And I do love the gag that they have to like run and jump start their car. You know, they have to get it pushed and then they have to start it up in second gear or some shit like that. I was like, that's not how cars work. That's not how cars work.
That's right. Then LaRusso in Cobra Kai, his job, because now he's rich, is he owns a high-end car dealership.
Of course he does. Of course he does. Does he have, like, his mom's station wagon and, like, a spinning, like, turret, like, on top of his car dealership?
No, but he does.
Half crash into the wall, you know?
Like, he does have a special area that's like kind of a Miyagi-Do area that he keeps, and he has the car that Mr. Miyagi gives him there.
Is it like a Friday the 13th situation where he has Miyagi's like dead severed head sitting there? It's all shriveled up and shit.
No, but he does have his purple heart.
Ah, yes, of course. Yeah, okay. Let's discuss Mr. Miyagi's background that we learn about in one of the most depressing ways I've ever seen in an alleged kids uplifting sports movie. We find out that Mr. Miyagi was a war hero. He is a decorated war hero. He was in an internment camp. His wife and child died during childbirth. We find this out because he is drunk and tells this story in uniform to Daniel. And then he stands up, he's doing different shit, like, you know, like he would at the time. I was like, oh my God, this is the most depressing, sad, emotional shit I've ever seen. And it's in this garbage pile of a movie, you know?
And that is a testament to Pat. How do you pronounce his last name? Marita?
Pat Marita? Yeah, Marita. Pat Marita. He was so good. And yes, it is. Like you said, it's testament to him because he makes that scene work. Daniel LaRusso, like, you know, Ralph Macchio sitting there doing his thing. It's like he had to have been sitting there like, oh my God, he is acting circles around me at the moment. What do I do? You know?
It's funny. So like Ralph Macchio's early career is basically the Karate Kid and the Outsiders.
Outsiders and Karate Kid is essentially it. Yeah. That's essentially his career.
Well, now he has Cobra Kai, which is a huge hit.
Still Karate Kid.
That's true. But
Breaking Bad or anything, you know?
Yeah. But The Outsiders, I was looking at that. I'm like, you know, if Holes came out in the 80s, Ralph Macchio would have played Zero.
That's another thing with you, Mike. You and the fucking movie Holes. I swear to God. You are always talking about that movie.
You know what? It's not quite cinematic masterpiece, but it's right there with the original Mighty Ducks, right below cinematic masterpiece.
Almost cinematic masterpiece Holes.
So the top tier cinematic masterpiece, they're like Da Vinci paintings. Right below them.
What's the second level? Like fucking Michelangelo?
No. Michelangelo's right up there with Da Vinci. I'm gonna say like
really good imitation. Like an almost perfect copy, but not from the original. It's like if Ben Leonardo da Vinci, like Ben da Vinci did it, you know, Benjamin da Vinci painted some da Vinci paintings. It wouldn't be the same, but it'd be close.
So the Iron Man, they're like, they call you the da Vinci of our time. Ridiculous. I don't paint.
Ridiculous. But and then I mean, with the Karate Kid, of course, and we have to mention it because it's the only thing that anyone ever knows about this movie, aside from Wax On, Wax Off. It's the soundtrack. Yeah. The soundtrack that this movie has, of course, You're the Best Around. That it's one of the greatest montage songs ever. Aside from when we'll get the Rocky, when we get the best montage songs around.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's that, hearing that song, it takes me back to like college. When my friends and I would start singing that fucking song, ironically, just like, you know, this is the ridiculous 80s right here. It's like, it's like, because Kenny Loggins was on vacation that day, we get this song, you know?
Do you know what I always think of when I think of You're the Best Around? It's the South Park episode where they're trying to lose their baseball games, and they want Randy to get up and keep fighting, so they get disqualified. He gets up, starts beating the shit out of the other dad, and starts singing, "I'm the best."
I didn't hear no bell. I thought this was America.
I thought this was America.
So it's great. It's great, Randy Marsh. It's great episodes of him. But and of course, we mentioned it for everything else. This movie, being a sports movie, has sports movie cliches. Obviously, it's the ragtag, you know, snobs versus slobs, essentially.
Yeah.
But it's also got one of the classic underdog sports movie cliches of the unconventional training methods.
Yeah.
You know, they're not training increases dojo. They're not training the actual way. What Dane LaRusso is doing, he's painting houses, he's painting fences, he's waxing cars, he's doing all kinds of shit. He's fighting the ocean to stand on his feet. He is just getting hit by waves at one point, and allegedly that's supposed to help his balance.
And the short shorts, 80s cliche short shorts.
Absolutely. Part of his training should be to find a way to keep his dick in his shorts, you know? If I see your dick, Danny, Daniel-san, you will do that, paint it, you'll paint the house again. If your dick falls out, I'm calling Elizabeth Shue. I'm telling her to go away because you're uncircumcised.
We gotta start catching flies with chopsticks.
Or hitting them with your dick hanging out of your shorts. You can't get up until you smack a fly out of the air with your short shorts and your dick hanging out of them. Mr. Miyagi, this is getting real weird. I don't care if I'm fucking drunk. Do it.
Are you turning Mr. Miyagi into a drunk pedophile?
No. He's not molesting Daniel. He's just coming up with unconventional treatment. He's not watching him do it. He's just making sure he's got like a vague, like a dirty mirror that he watches it through. Watches like Daniel's silhouette smack this fly. So he's not actually seeing his dick hit the fly, you know? He's being respectful.
Now, I was gonna bring up like, okay, if this movie was made today, what would be the recasting? But they already gave us the recast. Jackie Chan is Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah, unfortunately, we do know what the remake of this movie is, and it is Jackie Chan and Jaden Smith.
Will Smith. If I was actually remaking the movie, I would still consider Jackie Chan for Mr. Miyagi.
I mean, yeah, you kind of have to. He's kind of crazy nowadays. Mm-hmm. Like, he's kind of fallen into that realm of like conspiracy theories and kind of just being a weird dude, you know. He's kind of fallen off that wagon, but if anything, I would like to see like Jet Li be like Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah,
you know, and because Jet Li is, I mean, he's just as skilled as Jackie Chan, you know. It's and I just think it'd be fun because every time Jet Li has to like talk in movies, it's always hilarious. And you can tell Pat Morita, granted, I've never heard anything of him just talking as Pat Morita, but his Mr. Miyagi is very much like with a heavy accent, speaks in clipped English, you know. Jet Li could absolutely do that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But I'm trying to think of anybody else. Like, obviously, if we keep it Miyagi, he's got to be Asian. So, like,
yeah, I'm
trying to think of, like, the new wave that we could do. Like, Henry Golding would probably be, like, the first choice. That dude that's Snake Eyes now.
You could do like if you went with a Korean route, there's a lot of options because you feel like go look at any like Bong Joon-ho movie and you could probably find someone for the role.
Yeah, or if you want to make him like a little bit younger, maybe a Steven Yeun. Like, yeah, he'd be a good choice. I think he'd be fun. Yeah, that dude's gotta get in more shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, Steven Yeun is Glenn on The Walking Dead. He's also Invincible. He's the voice of that character. He's in a great movie with Samara Weaving where they fight their way through an office building, you know, and I can't remember the name of the damn movie, but it was pretty good when I watched it.
So the person I was thinking of from Bong Joon-ho movies is Kang Ho Sung. He was in Parasite and The Host and Snowpiercer.
Which character is he in Parasite?
He's like,
is he the father?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. That dude's awesome.
Yeah.
I do like that guy.
But then you have to change the martial art to a Korean martial art rather than karate or for the remake with Jackie Chan, they made it Kung Fu.
Yeah, I mean, it would obviously have to be appropriate to whatever it is he's, whatever he is. Obviously, he's Korean, but where the fuck is it? But yeah, he'd be really good. There's also, I'm trying to think, the guy, and he's in everything now. He plays Scorpion in the new Mortal Kombat.
Oh yeah, he's awesome.
He was in Westworld for a bit. Hawkeye kills him in Endgame. That actor, that dude would obviously, he'd be a great Miyagi because he's just a great actor as well. But
Hiroyuki Sanada.
That's it. Yeah. You gotta be fucking kidding me. What?
Yeah, he's amazing. And he's one of the guys that'll do his own stunts and everything. Like my suggestion for, the guy from Parasite, I don't know if he has any martial arts background or anything, but strictly off of acting chops, I think he could be Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah, and the movie with Samara Weaving and Steven, you know, thinking of as Mayhem. That's a great movie you should watch. But yeah, so like, yeah, there's a ton of Asian actors that you could get, and of course, then at that point, now being what Hollywood is now, because they finally realized that, you know, being diverse and getting people to play their appropriate roles, you know, it's a thing to do.
Let's play. If they made it in the 50s, who would be Mr. Miyagi?
It would be John Wayne, or be what's his name from Breakfast at Tiffany's? Fucking Mickey Rooney or whatever. No, Mickey Rooney. I was going to say Mickey Rourke too, but I was like, wait, that's not right. It's Mickey Rooney, yeah. You know, that's what it would be. But no, like nowadays, obviously, the people are realizing that movies starring people that should be those roles, you know, Asians playing Asians, you know, that should be what it is. Obviously, we're going to have Daniel LaRusso is possibly going to be Asian because I guess nowadays, like having an Asian man teach a white kid karate, it will get slammed by the internet. I'm not saying it should. I'm just saying that Twitter will have an issue with it. They'll be like, oh,
because like if you're setting it in a, because like I feel like it's appropriate for Daniel LaRusso to be like an Italian American.
Well, it's because he's a fish out of water is what he is. Yeah. It's a fish out of water story, and he's got to learn karate to beat up the karate knowing bullies, you know. But the true remake nowadays, it would be fucking MMA.
Yeah, it would be.
He'd be learning MMA. And that is quote unquote.
Joe Rogan is Mr. Miyagi.
That would be perfect. This is fucking like roided out Miyagi.
You know, he's like, here's the deal. We're going to do this DMT, and you're going to know everything you need.
Yeah, Daniel LaRusso's main training is just trying to figure out what the fuck he's talking about on his podcast. He's just learning out why he's sweating so much just sitting down, you know? like, why are you so bald and veiny now, Joe? Like, that's not natural. It's like, shut up. Learn how to do a reverse naked choke. You know, rear naked choke hold. By the way, when you get your leg broken, we're going to do an interview right after your leg breaks.
We're going to work on body triangles today.
Right. But yeah, I mean, that's what this movie would be. You know, if you're going to do it today, that's what the next Karate Kid will be. It'll be the MMA kid or some shit like that. And it'll be terrible because that's what MMA is. And sorry to ruin everyone's life. It's fucking terrible. You know, but that's the thing. Like when we'll discuss it more with boxing movies, martial arts movies fall into two very distinct categories. You either have white guys doing martial arts and it's not that great, or you have actual martial arts movies that are fucking amazing, you know? And there should be a crossover.
Now there, I know MMA is the likely Hollywood route, but if you want to do this right, you go full blown, like Shaolin soccer, martial arts type movie with it.
You do Kung Fu Hustle. But of course, you would have to get an Asian director involved. You'd have to get somebody who knows, you'd have to get Stephen Chow involved, somebody who knows what they're doing. And then you'd have some asshole of the month white kid that's at the center of this movie just sucking the charisma out of it, you know? And I will give Ralph Macchio that. For what he is in this movie, for all the shittiness that Daniel LaRusso is, Ralph Macchio is perfectly fine as Danny LaRusso.
And I think that is a testament to the movie is the younger actors do well enough. I'm not going to say they're acting great. They do well
Zapka and Macchio are awesome.
Yeah.
When you get to the extended generic bullies of Cobra Kai, you get that one dude that's, like I said, clearly on meth. Like the one with like the dyed hair that Danny has to beat before he gets to Johnny. And he's the one that confronts him before the fight too. You know, it's like that dude is clearly on some sort of drugs and he is insane. Then there's the put him in a body bag. Yeah, that guy, bowl cut, you know, that guy, he sucks too. But like all of those, like the extra characters, those dudes are just dudes that I swear the director's probably like, look, here's what you need to do. You need to just be over the top. And then they went over the top.
They bring them back in Cobra Kai. Same actors and everything.
Because they probably needed to have lunch that day. They needed to eat.
Well, the one guy they brought back plays a reverend. And I think he's actually a reverend in real life.
Probably because, you know, his acting career never went anywhere because he's generic Cobra Kai goon number two, you know? Mm-hmm. Even there is the black guy in Cobra Kai who is, I think, Lamar from Revenge of the Nerds. I believe that's who that is. And he had a little bit of a career in Revenge of the Nerds, you know, but
yeah.
He's not William Zabka, who was, like I said, the bully of the 1980s. You know, Biff Tannen had Back to the Future. Bill Zabka was a bully in like four different movies.
Yeah.
Basically played the same role and was fucking amazing every time, you know? The dude is awesome. And the dude gets it, too. He gets it. When he is on, he's been on Preston and Steve a bunch of times. Now that's, for people who don't know, it's 93.3 WMMR in Philadelphia. It's a morning radio show. It's a great show. They have celebrity interviews. When Zapka comes on, he was promoting Cobra Kai season, whatever they're on. He ends every interview, like out of nowhere, he'll go, hey, screw you, Melon, which is his line from Back to the School.
Yeah.
It's like, he fucking gets it. Like, this guy gets it. And
he's still, like, with Cobra Kai, he's a good actor. Like, he's not just a bully, but he gets it that, like, is his type and plays off of it.
And for a while, I think he was one of those guys that was like, you know what? I'm more than just a bully of the 80s. I'm a director. I'm going to do this. I'm a producer, you know, that kind of thing. But then he's also one of those to realize like, hey, wait a minute. They want to do this again? I'm okay with that. I can do this. I'm self-aware enough to be able to do this. And I don't think Ralph Macchio's at that point. And then there's other guys of the 80s, like Scott Baio is absolutely not at that point. That fucker thinks he is like the next head of the Republican Party. He's going off the deep end too. And there's so many guys.
The bully that actually full-blown producing is, what's his name from A Christmas Story?
Exactly. And he is Zach Penn. I think it's Zach Penn. But he's also a writer. He wrote like Man of Steel. You know, granted, not great movie, but he's a writer in Hollywood. Like all of these guys very much at some point do something absolutely different because they don't want to be known as the bully. But then they circle back. The smart ones circle back and realize that that's what made them their money. And when you're self-aware to be able to embrace that and be like, hey, this is it. I find that amazingly endearing. And it's like, look, dude, you get it. That's awesome. You're like a regular person. You don't have your head up your ass, you know, like a lot of these guys get. And it's part of the reason why I love Schwarzenegger so much, because even though I'll Be Back has become such a joke, like that he says, that's like, that's what he does. He's not like Stallone who takes shit way too fucking seriously, you know?
Yeah. With Stallone, what his version of Dread was on the other day. His whole speech where he's like screaming and like, oh man. Wait, is it Carl Urban that did Dread? He killed
it. He did it right. Yeah. He did it right because A, you're not supposed to see Dredd's face. Yeah. And that is what that movie did right. He's supposed to be generic cop is what he's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so Stallone, being Stallone, of course, first thing he does, rips his fucking helmet off. And it's like, hey, look, I'm Sylvester Stallone. Did anybody not realize it was me? Because when I talk, I don't have a distinct voice at all, you know? But yeah, Sylvester Stallone, and again, we'll get into it next week, he takes himself too fucking seriously. And that's the thing with every good, and I'm going to tie it in back to every, like, sports movies. The ones that don't take themselves too seriously are the best ones.
Yeah.
And the ones that do take themselves too seriously, like fucking Rudy, are unwatchable in my eyes because sports are A, supposed to be fun. It's a game, for Christ's sake. And if you take that shit too seriously, you become a joke. And when you're like fucking Rudy, who worships a college that he will never get into in his own right, and he has to basically like bully his way into, It's sad because look, man, your whole life is, you're a 26-year-old man and your whole life revolves around playing one game, like playing football at one college. Like, dude, life has passed. That time is gone. You need to move on with your life. The one, and then there's like Major League, who that is an actual plot point where like some of these guys, this is their last chance. They're just making the best of their last chance. Same with The Replacements. The best of their last chance. And none of those movies take themselves that seriously. When it comes to Dead the Heart, they have it. But the rest of the movie treats it like a game.
Necessary Roughness as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's the best part. Then you want to talk about this week. Shaolin Soccer does not take soccer seriously at all. And it's fucking phenomenal. You know?
Well, you get, well, I think Family Guy did like a cutaway sketch. It's like, it's like, that's like an 80 movies that, you know, takes place in real life where it's like Johnny Lawrence is like bully. And he's like, I'm better at karate. And Lewis is like, no, I'm better at karate. And then some other guy walks by. He's like, you do karate, nerds.
Exactly. It's like, you got to understand the world you're working in. And with Karate Kid, the karate is the central part to why Danny has to defend himself against these bullies. And it is
in a situation that he aggressed.
Exactly. Yeah. That he started. It's that he has to finish what he started, but still. And now this movie also has one of the biggest cliches that a lot of other sports movies have. And it's at the end when our hero, our in quotes hero, has triumphed, the villain now does his turn, hands our hero the trophy and says, hey man, you're all right. I respect you. It's like, no, that is not what Johnny Lawrence would be doing in that situation. Yeah. He'd be fucking pissed. And he'd be fighting the fact that he kicked him in the head, got no points, got kicked in the head and lost, you know?
And that's like a big thing in Cobra Kai.
Exactly.
Like Johnny Lawrence is still bitter about it, and LaRusso's still cocky as shit about it.
And that's, I think, and that's, that shows just the difference in the times. In the 1980s, it was very much the, oh, our hero, our underdog, the hero, the white blonde bullies, which is what Cobra Kai is, except for Lamar. They're all white blonde kids, and they are our bullies. Our scrappy little blue collar underdog has now triumphed. Oh, hooray. But when you think about what actually transpires in that movie, Danny LaRusso is a piece of shit who starts all of this and wins illegally. So yes, of course, looking back after a little bit of an analysis of this movie, if you're going to reboot that in the 2020s, you're going to look at that and go, oh, we need to play off the fact that this was cliche as shit and was not like legit.
And now if they were,
would be pissed.
And if they were to reboot it if they were to make a remake today, it's going to go, there's three possible outcomes. The most likely is we get the MMA kid with Joe Rogan as Mr. Miyagi, and it fucking sucks.
I don't know. I kind of want to see it. I kind of want to see it.
The second, now, this would probably never happen, but you get the best written and directed movie of the possibilities with Bong Joon-ho directing it and Kang Ho-sung being Mr. Miyagi, and they do a Korean take on it. That's going to give you your best written movie and most well-made movie.
Yeah, it'd also be the one that no one sees but gets recognized by the Oscars.
Yeah.
You know, it's, yeah.
And then your third option is you get someone like fucking Ang Lee to direct it.
Oh, God. No. No.
But yeah. He did Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah, but he's fucking Ang Lee.
It's true. All right, then fine. You get someone like Stephen Chow to direct it.
Yeah, and it would be
and
more
you
of a
get, and you get Hiroyuki Sanada, and you make it a full-blown kung fu movie where it's just off the wall action. Like the training sequences are in like slow motion where and you don't like, the writing doesn't have to be great. It's going to be pretty funny, but it, some people might randomly show up with mustaches.
Right, exactly. Yeah, Elizabeth Shue's character would show up with a mustache for no reason. But you know, somebody would get hit in the head with a bottle for no reason. But yeah, it's
just off the wall.
And of course, none of those would happen because the actual remake would try to do the exact same thing that the 84 Karate Kid does. And we would get like a knowing wink to the remake of Jaden Smith, Jackie Chan. And it'd be like, oh, remember this? Like, yeah, we fucking remember this, you piece, you you fucking untalented hack. But then the movie would just be a piece of shit starring nobody that would go straight to Netflix or something like that. It wouldn't go anywhere. And that's unfortunately just the reality we live in with Hollywood nowadays. But sports movies nowadays, I can't think of one. Like, I can't think of one recently that was worth it. Like, they all suck. And all the older ones, like 90s and 80s, 80s and 90s especially, are like the heyday of the sports movie, you know? Because that's when people didn't give a shit.
So, like, 42 is pretty good.
It's still, it's a serious Jackie Robinson historical drama. It's not a major league. You know,
it's
the creatively bankrupt Hollywood being like, what popular historical sports figure can we take and make an Oscar bait movie out of? That's the only thought process they ever put into it. It's really all it is. And that's what, Chadwick Boseman?
Yeah.
So they get him, a known up and coming actor. Probably saw that, was like, this is my Oscar right here. This is my Oscar movie. And everyone else was like, let's take this super serious because it's a serious topic. And then everyone was like, we blew it because it's just too fucking serious and too fucking sappy. Whereas you need someone to do like A League of Their Own nowadays, where you're getting a layered drama comedy, you know, and a watchable family movie that is also like very informative and gets people talking after they watched it.
Yeah.
You know, and nowadays people saw 42 and they were like, oh, is it any good? Yeah, I mean, it's the story of Jackie Robinson. It's like, yeah, everyone fucking knows it. Oh, well, they showed this little part. It's like, well, what does that fucking matter? You know, like, get to the real shit that he went through, you know, the hardcore racism that he faced. Do shit like that. If you're going to do this, get real with it. Like, do not give me the Disneyfied version of it. I don't need to see the happy-go-lucky, everything works out in the end, he breaks the color barrier version. Everyone knows that story. It's what white kids are taught in history class. You know, we need to see what really went down. Like, so we need a Cobb for this generation. A monster of a human being who happened to be one of the greatest baseball players of all time.
Yeah.
You know, but he was a very complex, horrible human being. And yet in that movie, you're not quite humanizing him, but you're not quite vilifying him. And that's a step that nowadays movies, Hollywood's just not going to take. They're either going to make him the worst human being ever and have some minor character be the hero in this story, or they're going to make him humanize somehow, which unfortunately you can't really do with that guy, you know?
They should make the Babe Ruth movie where he's just chain smoking and eating snakes and then occasionally goes out and just hits dingers.
Exactly. Exactly. You make, like, I want to see the major league version of Babe Ruth, like that story. I want to see where he's like the misfit, just this ragtag bunch of crazy. He's getting everybody in trouble. He's like banging whores. He's doing fucking eating hot dogs on the field.
The Will Chamberlain story where he bangs 20,000 women.
How has that not been done yet? That's the craziest shit ever. Like, even porn, I don't think, has touched that yet. And it's like the perfect scenario for it. No one has touched the Will Chamberlain story. And if they do, unfortunately nowadays, because no one can have sex in movies anymore, it's that would be the thing that they do. But somehow they wouldn't touch on that. And I'd be like, that's the only thing anyone knows about Will Chamberlain.
Opening scene, Wilt Chamberlain scores 100 points, and you immediately in one game, then you immediately cut to like the Straight Out of Compton party scene after their concert, where he's just there with like 20 naked women.
He's trying to like claw for air because he's buried under a pile of naked women, you know, because that was fucking Wilt Chamberlain's life.
Yeah.
No, but of course, again, like I said, you can't have sex in movies nowadays because apparently it's all exploitation. No
or give me a movie about the Wilt Chamberlain and Arnold Schwarzenegger friendship.
It's the movies that everyone needs and will want to see, but aren't going to get made because guess what? They're not going to make money and they're not blockbusters. No one, they're going to be done by some tiny, like little Oscar house that just wants their little Oscar. And they're either going to be unwatchable because it'll be so boring, or they'll just be just boring and like generic.
Super watered down generic versions.
Exactly. It's like, we can't do this anymore because no one has the balls anymore to put shit on screen. Like, even for all its faults, White Man Can't Jump would never be made today. Simply because everyone would complain about the racial element of it. It's like, are you fucking serious? Harriet Tubman gets her own fucking movie where she's like John Wick, and we praise the shit out of that, even though it's the most unrealistic thing that's ever happened. And yet we treat it like it's historical fact. It's like, what are we fucking doing nowadays? You know, we got to stop listening to the internet and just put the hands of movies and creativity back in the hands of psychopaths with a camera who are going to make insane movies. And sports movies are the perfect movies to do that because they have every character you could possibly want in a movie, and you can just throw them all together and just see what the fuck happens.
Wait, so with the potential Bong Joon-ho Karate Kid, the Taekwondo is Korean, so it'd be the Taekwondo Kid.
Taekwondo is fucking cool as hell. There's all kinds of crazy shit going on in Taekwondo. you're kicking people, you're throwing people, you're doing all kinds of wild shit. Like, it would be great.
It would be an amazing movie. No one would see it.
And we'll never see it. No one outside of Korea would see it. And if they did see it in the United States, it'd be like, oh, this little tiny Korean movie is just really good to watch.
Well, no, only way you make it in the United States make money is there's a history with Bong Joon-ho and Chris Evans. So you make Chris Evans the head of the bad guy dojo.
Or you put him in there somewhere because movies nowadays love to do it. They market the shit out of a certain character being in a movie and then have him only in one scene. You know, it's like, it's the Jeff Goldblum Jurassic World paradox, you know? You get him in 5 seconds of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom and he's not in the rest of the goddamn movie. But every trailer shows him and nothing but him.
But here's the deal. Chris Evans, it can play a great asshole. You make him the John Cleese equivalent.
Yeah, just do it. I just want someone to make a sports movie that's not an out and out parody like Benchwarmers or, you know, The Ringer, shit like that. Just the dumbass movies that are just super silly, straight to video shit that no one ever wants to watch. I mean, like the Waterboy. Waterboy is the example that disproves the rule and all that, because the exception to the rule, because it's a funny movie. But then there's just the complete cartoonish angle, or the other end we get nowadays is just super serious. And there is a middle ground. You don't need to do one or the other. Just be a good, funny movie with a little bit of heart, throw all the cliches we've talked about in it, and you got yourself another great sports movie. And all we're going to do is just make spin-off movies of the fucking Rocky franchise, which we will talk about next week. So I think that's a great place to transition to the end. Yep. Mike, where can people find us on the internet?
All right. So for your streaming pleasure. We are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, and a bunch of other sites because of Anchor. If you want to see all of them, you can head to anchor.com at Happy Hour Films Podcast. It lists them all there. You can find us on social media on Facebook and Instagram at Happy Hour Films Podcast. Give us a like, give us a follow, shoot us a comment, shoot us a message. We love to hear from you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we're just keep everybody up there. We are still working on t-shirts. We're still finalizing some shit.
I'm working on contacting Gordon Bombay to see if we can put his face on shirts. You will not be seeing a Gordon Bombay shirt, but I wish.
Hey, if Emilio's down and Disney will let us, probably won't, but we'll do it.
All right, it doesn't have to be just Emilio. Like, Emilio, can we just use one of your headshots on our shirt?
Exactly. We already got the tank top, buddy. Can we just get, you know, one extra shot? But so next week, I will say it's not. We're not going to call it an in-between week because we're still going to be talking a sports movie. Like we mentioned numerous times, we're going to talk the Rocky franchise and we're going to talk just Rocky. We're not talking about Creed, but it'll probably get mentioned, but we won't be going in depth into Creed 1 or 2.
Yeah.
But Rocky 1 through 6 is what we're going to be talking about. Probably a general Rocky talk would probably be better. Mostly focusing on, I'm guessing, 3 and 4 because they're the best ones. But
yeah, 1, 3, and 4 are probably going to be the.
Yeah.
Because one has to be a primary topic of discussion.
Yeah. I mean, because it's one of the few sports movies where the hero loses.
Yeah.
He does not win that first movie for anyone who somehow doesn't know that. But until that time, when we talk about Rocky next week, I have been Ross Bacon.
I've been Mike McWigan.
And we'll see you guys next time. So long.